Welcome, listeners. As I drive down this dark, diverse highway and pause to pick up John Aitken and Bob Fleming from Prog to Who, trek this out and take your seats. We are on a journey of discovery into the imagery and mastery of Lynchian landscapes, the efflux of stories interwoven in a tapestry of films. This is The Lynch Mob. And welcome to another Lynch Mob. Here we are again, and this time it's Wild at Heart.
You want me to shoot Sailor in the brains with a gun?
Uh-oh.
In life, you never know what's going to come along next. And there's very tender moments, and then there's very violent moments, and then there's confusion and despair. And then suddenly you're in love. So there's got to be room for all these things, you know, in a film.
Lola!
This whole world, wild at heart and weird on top.
Yes, the 1990 film by David Lynch, starring Laura Dern, Nicolas Cage, William Dafoe, and a wealth of people out of Twin Peaks. Now, this is the first time I've seen it in years. This is the last one of all Liz where I've seen it before. I haven't seen what's left, right? What we've got to go through. And I watched it at the time of Twin Peaks. Because Twin Peaks came out in 91, I think. I was watching it more or less as soon as it came out. I think it was BBC Two or whatever. And then I found this was one of his work, and everyone went nuts on it because of the music as well. It was so 90s. It's just, it's my glory years, the 90s. So I relished with it. It was really good to watch again. Was it your first time or second?
Badlamenti. it was my first time watching it. I've been put off from watching it in the past because, and I don't want to state this, but I fucking hate Nicolas Cage. Oh, I fucking hate all his films apart from this one.
Whoa!
It's almost as if he is perfectly suited for this sort of like exaggerated role.
That's what I thought when I watched it again for ages. I'm like, is he playing himself? Or is he playing this character in all his other films? Because he's just perfect as this wildness.
He's amazing. Like, I mean, I used to be a massive Nicolas Cage fan when I was younger. But this part was made for him. He's perfect in it. He's just cool as fuck.
Yeah.
But it's my first time seeing it. And I did what I've done a couple of times while we've been doing this. First watch, I was like, this is fucking shit. saying, Neil, that's just shite. And then I did my second watch and was like, this is the best film I've ever seen. And then I've just done my third watch fresh for the podcast.
What about it this time?
I feel I feel a bit fucked up. Yeah. For me, this is the darkest Lynch film we've done. You know, for me personally... it's the way I've taken it and stuff. I feel there's loads of dark shit. People trying to get away in the car, and it's quite suffocating and stuff. I don't know, but yeah, third watch, I still feel a bit like on edge.
I get what you mean there about the darkness, because it is. I find it more in your face than most of his other stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of his other stuff is left to your own imagination, like. You know what I mean? Subtle things happen, or the strangeness is so strange and surreal that it's quite horrific. And this seems to be, there's an accident, it's in your face. This girl was raped, oh, we're showing it, it's in your face. And it's quite shocking. And apparently it was so shocking at the time that he cut some out as well before he actually released it.
I mean, opens up with somebody getting his brains beaten out on a marble step. I mean...
I know, it does over the top a bit, don't it?
just slightly. Because I love the heavy metal music that's in it. You know, when the rage is going, you know, it's just losing control. It comes in, it's perfect. And that first scene, you're like, kind of what's going on? And then suddenly, because I didn't get any of this when I first watched it, but when obviously it all comes together, he really just goes fucking apeshit, doesn't he? It's like proper savage. Just, and I think this is one thing that for me it goes through this whole film, is the savagery, the animalisticness of it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a word. You know, because it's all her mum's mental and does little cat things, and people are making fucking weird animal noises, and it's just raw animalistic. A big part of it.
I think you've got it there, the nail on the head there with raw. I think that's what it is to show the rawness. Hell. I think that's what it is.
It does have many of the elements that are in his other films as well. I think it's like this film features a lot of other stuff that is part of like all Lynch's works. It's got, but it's less subtle about it. I mean, you can't get any less subtle than the Wizard of Oz references, which are fucking not subtle at all. In fact, he goes out of his way to say this is a Wizard of Oz reference all the time. And whereas in some of the other ones, like Mulholland Drive, for instance, it's a lot more subtle in that way. So maybe this is just a younger, brasher director at this point.
Or you could see, you know, because it's someone else's work, isn't it? And he's based a lot on
a book, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember. I remember his second name's Clifford, so that's good.
Yeah.
That's already good for me. He's always a winner. It made me think, because of the troubles he was having with Twin Peaks at this time, he just went more or less, fuck it, I'm doing this, and I'm going to put all what I want in this. So, I've read a lot of reviews, you know, before this podcast. A lot of people was like, wow, it's too much in your face. But I just think, at the time, and see what his journey is within his film at the time, he got Twin Peaks. He wasn't allowed to do everything he wanted to do. He was having some trouble, and he just went, wow, I'm fucking doing this. I'm being as wild as I want.
Yeah,
and it really does, you know, show that it really does go for the sort of wild at heart name of the film kind of thing. I mean, for me, it's a parody on what you'd maybe call a teen road movie kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know, but it's always usually about like someone, you know, the couple escaping to live the best life, whereas this is not that at all, and it's kind of like they're just escaping, and they're escaping real badness as well, to enter into more badness. But it's still the theme of good and bad, that sort of balance that Lynch brings to that. And I think that it's definitely in the more, you know, higher percentage of bad. But it still has them elements of that balance, I think, as well.
There is a quote from Lynch who says, "Wild at Heart is about finding love in hell, which might be a theme in all my movies. This particular hell is modern life."
Yeah.
So, yeah, I could maybe get with that.
Yeah.
I think there's this bears a lot of comparison with his other films in terms of overall the whole arc of the thing is about yet again somebody growing up.
Yeah.
It's like Blue Velvet, it was about Kyle MacLachlan's character growing up and the transition from like innocence to adulthood and accepting of all the darker sides of all that sort of stuff. But it does take it's only right at the very end that he actually works that out. And he needs the sort of good witch. And I've got to say, Cheryl Lee, fucking love her. I think she's
Laura Palmer. Laura Palmer.
As soon as she appears, I get a shiver down my back. It's like mental. It's great.
And Audrey was in it as well, wasn't she? Yeah. In that car accident bit. A little bonus for everyone.
Yeah.
It would have been a bonus if I would have found her on a road.
What, dying?
Oh, either way. Wow. Doesn't matter.
There's fire motif as well. That is another thing. The fire motif is like these kids, these Laura Dern and Nicolas Cage, they're just young and they're in love. And there's that scene where he talks about his snakeskin jacket, and I forget the line, but it's
individuality represents
a symbol. It represents a symbol, not represents it directly, but it represents a symbol of my individuality and my belief in personal freedom. So. Yeah. All the way through this film, these two characters are like she believes wild at heart and a little bit of crazy on top. They are young and they are carefree and it's all about freedoms, but they don't learn till right at the very end that freedom is not really freedom. Freedom is kind of like, if you're free, if you've got utter freedom, then you expressing that freedom is inevitably going to impact somebody else's freedom.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as actual freedom. It's a kind of massive concept that you kind of fly past. And it's only when they get right to the end of the film that he accepts that being free, because I mean, freedom, all it does for Nicolas Cage's character is, all it does for Sailor is get him in more shit.
More trouble,
and
yeah.
And so the more he expresses his freedom, the more he gets fucking caught and put in jail again and stuff like that. So it's about Sailor and really accepting the responsibilities of his adulthood, and like, rather than being that free thing, he decides to learn the lesson that the Good Witch gives him.
Yeah.
And goes back to it. And that's why it's like a parody, like you say, but it's like a parody of a love story as well.
Yeah.
Because we get the running into her arms at the end, which is like total Hollywood cliche. Yeah. And we get an entire song at the end of the Love Me Tender stuff.
Well, I love that bit as well, because...
Oh, that was great, yeah.
Because you've got the scene at the club where they go to that metal club, and it's fucking great scene, you know, and it cuts from her, you know, jumping on the bed like to them, you know, to the metal, they're in the metal club and they're doing that sort of heavy metal dancing. I don't know what to call it, and it's like fucking savage, like and that's like the rage of freedom or rawness or whatever. And when that guy knocks into her and he just points at the band, you know, it's cool as fuck. He points at the band, he stops straight away, and he goes, you know, fucking does him and that. And it's like, do you know, whatever. And he starts singing that Elvis song, like Love Me or what, but not Love Me Tender.
Yeah.
And then when she asks him why didn't you, and I love that scene as well, because you've got all these like screaming fans, you know, like it becomes like a bit of a Beatles Elvis.
Yeah.
And a little tiny concert.
You hear the screams, yeah.
Yeah, it's proper. It's a fucking clever scene. I just thought that was class.
It's the first time I've ever sat through a whole end credit sequence of a film in years.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the whole thing, it's just him singing. It's Nicolas Cage singing as well.
Yeah, yeah, he's brilliant. And he's Elvis. Nice. He's Elvis. All the way through. Yeah, getting Elvis tribute out going. But I love that he came back round at the end, that he then sung Love Me Tender to her.
Well,
you know, rather than the person that he sang it to before, and he would never sing it again to another woman kind of thing.
He, like, their expression of their love is heavy metal, as you say. Mm. But at the end, it's a 50s...
Yeah,
song.
It's beautiful.
It's 50s, yeah, and you know Lynch. How he likes the 50s.
He loves the 50s. It's all the way through. It could actually.
That's
be.
Why. He's, that's the at growing up part. That's how he's grown up.
Yeah.
Oh, I've had a John. I've had a thinker in my all head.
Right. Yes.
yeah. And you see, right, and this is what I was trying to wrap my brain about what it meant. So there's a bit where when they've gone, I think it's from when they sat around the table in Big Tuna and they go to bed.
Yeah.
Oh no, sorry. It's the scene when he's telling her about this sexual encounter he had where she wouldn't. This last one.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so they end up having this. It's like a colour red, the metal music, and it's full on, like, you know, proper aggressive sex. Then the green light comes on, and then it sort of goes to a more, you know, chilled vibe. Now I'm thinking that's probably the balancing. It's on the edge of, you know, what John's saying, and when it goes to the end and the rock and roll leaves and it's tender love, kind of half a rawness, half a tenderness, and maybe that's him saying, or you know, saying like. Now happening, it's
a road trip, isn't it? That's the journey, the journey from A to B, and that is the transitional part of it, isn't it?
I just came in my head then.
Something I just found out today, like Marietta, the kind of evil cartoon villain of the piece, it's her actual mum.
Yeah, yeah, it's her mum. Yeah, I mean. To be honest with you, I looked and I thought, I bet that's her mum in real life. And I had a look and I was like,
I had no idea that, because I was thinking, wow, you know, she obviously gets her looks from her dad or something.
I mean, like, can we talk about Marietta? Fucking hell.
Yeah.
I mean, just brilliant. Absolutely
brilliant.
You know
what? The whole of the film wouldn't have happened if Sailor just gave it a man one in the bog at the beginning.
Well,
then it would have been sorted.
Do you think one of the reasons that she wanted to kill Sailor is because he rejected her?
Yeah.
And she basically fancies him.
Yeah.
She fancies her daughter's boyfriend. And she can't really cope with that. And she does. She tries it on with him and he rejects her. And that's when all the bad shit happens and she disapproves of Sailor, doesn't she?
Well, I think as well it could be to do with... Because this is a very clever plot, you know, as well as all the, you know... The plot of this whole sort of... He didn't know Lulu before. You know, Sailor didn't know Lulu before, but she was a driver for Santos, who's in there. You know, he witnessed the house being burnt down. And then a year later, he met Lulu properly. You know, and the plot goes on. And the mum knew that he was the driver for Santos as well. And it's all these parts are coming together. It's sort of like this sort of conspiracy or not, yeah, conspiracy or secret. You know, these all these secrets are coming out. But I think it's a bit of both, John. Like, when the way I looked at it was like she does fancy him, but I think it's this whole, you know, bad lad Santos. But she obviously likes the bad lads because she's with Santos.
Yeah.
And that thing with fucking with Johnny, he's in Twin Peaks, isn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, Carl, the whole bit with him, you know, it's just so weird. So you've got her doing that little cat thing, you know, whatever, peekaboo, you know, in the house before he goes off to find her. And then you've got him just sat having a whiskey watching fucking animals tear each other apart going...
I mean, that's in Twin Peaks season 3, isn't it? Where you get... Where she's watching animals. It's one of Lynch's... It's another one of the languages of Lynch thing. He tends to... Like, the fire is a thing. And I'll tell you what, there's lots of really nice Lynch cuts, really nice Lynch editing stuff.
Yeah.
And the one that I liked most was, like, you get the image of the flames of the burning house.
Yeah.
And then it does a smash cut straight to, like, Laura Dern smoking. And that fire goes from there into a cigarette and she's inhaling it.
Yeah.
So she's bringing in the badness as well. So that's why... I just think there's lots of stuff like that that really... There's one scene where it's shot from above and they're laying on the bed, across the bed at a weird angle.
Yeah.
And it looks like a playing card. It's just stuff like that that just like, it makes it a richer experience.
With the film as well, is a few people have said, oh, well, it's linear piece. It just goes from the beginning right to the end. Well, it doesn't. It sort of doesn't. Yeah. It drip feeds you little things, what has happened in the past. And then you get to start understanding that how well connected her mum is. And then you get the backstory of that head gangster with his half naked women going all over the place. Who just comes on for a short period of time. I must have worked out it was roughly around 12 minutes is on screen. That's it. And he's gone. And then, but there's that whole set and charade and that dining table meal that he has and everything. It's just haunting. Mm. That to me was lynching. It was like, I would do this enormous piece of stage production because it is nice bit of stage stuff. And you're going to see it, and then that's it. It's gone.
I mean, that whole bit with Mr. Reindeer, I'm going to give you a Doctor Who reference now. So he had the two girls either side of him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, the one on the left looked a bit like Perry off Doctor Who.
That is your fucking Doctor Who.
That the reference. You might have well said her left nipple looked like.
That's what I had in my head. Pop, pop, pop.
Or you might as well go like Mr. Reindeer is a bloke and Doctor Who's a bloke. So there you go.
She did look a bit like Perry. Anyway, you were saying, John.
Yeah, I know. So, but there's like. These incidental characters as well are quite nice. Got like Isabella Rossellini's character.
And just to jump in, right? You know, people out there listening to this, a lot of people watch Blue Velvet, who says, oh, he really, you know, he used her and got to do this and that and the other. This was years after. You know what I mean? Mm. And it shows that she really loved that director and, you know, she would work. And this is a tiny little cameo role. And she jumped in and did it.
What I was going to say about that character, she has the red shoes, but the snake skin on them, you know, which for me is saying she's wild, a bit dangerous. Because the red shoes that Lula wears, you know, it's the obvious Dorothy kind of thing, you know, when she's clipping her heels after she nearly gets whatever by Bobby. But I love that kind of thing saying she's, you know, she's not a nice character in The Wizard of Oz. She's a bad one. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's the same with the mother. She's a bad one in The Wizard of Oz.
Well, her name and her character's name is Perdita, which means lost in Latin.
There you go, John.
He always goes that level deeper, John. He goes
one step further.
Making us look daft, Cliff.
No. talking of looking daft. No, talking of like the bad characters, like Mr. Randy is only in it 12 minutes or so. William Defoe's character doesn't turn up until like the last third of the screen.
Yeah,
last 47 minutes,
and he's completely and utterly fucking. He's the total. He's a bad guy. He's a bad guy, obviously. But Yeah, he like that's another cracking performance by somebody.
He's
known for cracking performances.
Well, what happened was he went to get his, you know, whatever costuming done and things like that. David Lynch went, "Have you got a dentist?" He went, "Yeah, why?" And he went, "Well, we're going to go to the dentist and get, because normally what they do with your teeth is paint them like that." Yeah. So they went and got his actual dentures, you know, and put his mouth, so it made his mouth come out that bit more. Mm. And he said, as soon as I got them in, I got the fucking character. And it was, because it's an amazing performance. Mm. I'm still a bit scared of him right now after watching.
I tell you what, that like scene where he goes up to Lula and he's just saying, what is he saying? What's the word
fuck
he
me.
Says?
Say fuck me. Say fuck me.
Yeah,
whatever.
Say fuck me. And he does it so often that she eventually
does it,
almost
yeah.
does.
Yeah.
It's and she knows that she's been manipulated at that point. She's like, it freaks her out. She has rape memories and the feeling of knowing she kind of just participates in her abuse at some point, which is what she was just about to do. And the fact that he just left her there and like, he's done his job there.
Yeah,
he's established his dominance. He just fucks off. He's happy with that.
Yeah.
Well, I want to talk about obviously Lula because this is similar to Laura Palmer, or some, you know, for the female characters that Lynch portrays. There's this back this daddy issue kind of thing, but not in the same way, you know, as Laura. But the obviously a dad dying, the uncle or whatever raping her and smacking her in the face, her having a boss. That's a lot of shit to go through. But they're quite a well-off family. You know, they've got a nice house. It's a big house. They've got money. That kind of thing, the same as Laura, really. You know, it's not, they're not poor people. And it's this sort of like, this really tarnished girl who comes from a nice, you know, on face value, a nice place.
Yeah.
And that adds to her character, makes it fucking really intriguing. Just the way it slips through and it's fucked up.
Yeah, I find that quite real in his work, that he likes to say that the silent middle classes. The middle classes always have a reputation of looking upwards and forgetting where they're from, and therefore hiding all the secrets in the cupboard because they want to, you know, get up the level.
Progress
and
up that ladder, yeah.
It looks like David always looks at them and goes, you know what I mean, they've got more secrets than anyone. Get them out of the... And he shows you what's in their closet.
Yeah. It's exactly the blue velvet of the beautiful suburbia. Underneath it, there is filth and
filth
dirt
and horror.
Yeah,
and it's fucking super clever, but I'm definitely getting like, you know, because this is my first journey into all these films that we've been doing, and like I said, this one for me is one of the darkest ones, but there was some funny parts in it. My favourite part was, I can't remember his name, the guy from Twin Peaks. He talks about his dog when they sat around the table.
Jack Nance.
Jack Nance.
He raised the head. He's been in everything, nearly.
But he's always plays like, apart from, you know, he plays a fucking nutter apart from being Twin Peaks. But it's like, my dog barks. You know, and then he's like, picture what my dog is. My dog's inside me. And I'm like, what does that mean? But I was laughing my head off. I thought it was brilliant. He just barks at him. He's class, John Lance. I think he's great.
I think one of the problems with, the only maybe a little problem I have with the film is that Lynch... as the Doctor Who references, what the fuck am I talking about? No, the Wizard of Oz references, that one, Jack Nance says, it could be Toto from The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, he didn't
we
have
know
to
who
say
Toto
that.
Is.
Yeah.
Well,
but
yeah.
Like,
that...
But I think, I'm suspecting that's done, not as because he wants to make sure the audience understands it, because they fucking understand it. By this point, they've seen witches and all sorts.
They've seen bad just, witches, yeah. Pointy shoes. Yeah. When her mum's like crying in the toilet and puking, you see her, she has pointy shoes.
Yeah,
you know, like you're saying, the Wizard of Oz, right? Let's talk about, can we talk about Wizard of Oz? Because obviously it's come up in a lot of films that we've talked about, Will Lynch and in Twin Peaks, this being the most obvious one. Is it about the journey, trying to find good, trying to find, just what is it with Lynch and Wizard of Oz?
It's trying to get, like she says, she wants to go to the end of the rainbow, which is basically the Emerald City, isn't it? So it's a road trip. The Yellow Brick Road is the road trip. But it's also a trip because she doesn't actually go anywhere in The Wizard of Oz, does she? She's in Kansas all the time. It's in her mind.
Yeah.
And this is kind of what this is as well. That's why some of the acting, I think, is over the top and deliberately so, because it's not an actual journey. It's representative of actually the actual transition. Like I said, from like wild at heart to a responsible being an adult and sort of thing.
Yeah.
So, and the idea is like the Emerald City, that the thing that they're going for at the end is this ideal of amazingness that can solve all their problems yet when they get there, it's just fake. And that's really what the trying to attain this sort of excellent sort of culmination of all your wishes and have them like met is something that is, it's not the important part. The important part is the transition to trying to get there and what you learn on the journey.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what this is, yeah.
No, because it's just because obviously it's come up pretty much, well, so far apart from Elephant Man, every film, you know, we've done kind of thing. So I just wondered what, well, it makes that sense what you're saying about his obsession with.
I think you also got to think of when Wizards of Oz came out, what, 1939, is it? Something like that.
40s, yeah.
And then you've got The Age of David Lynch, so it might have been also a classic of what he watches. But it is also a journey of someone growing up. Dorothy has to grow up, and you meet people along your path of life who are good and some are bad. But you always have this dream, you know what I mean, an end dream. And whether the end dream, when she reaches it, it ends up shit anyway. And there's always something else in the pathway. And he puts that in his films really cleverly, especially Blue Velvet, of showing that transition. He even does it in Twin Peaks as well. He's showing the children's lives growing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
As they're going through. So I think it's something which he's learned from. And when he gets to Mulholland Drive, I think he's got it there perfect, because he only subtly brings it in and points where you can see, and he gives reference to it. In this one, I think he uses it a little bit too much in your face. But I also think that at the time of what he was going through, he probably thought, fuck it, I'm putting it all together in this, because it might even be his last one.
There's a bit of fuck you in it. Obviously, the fuck you at Big Junior on the welcome sign. But there is a bit, like we were saying earlier, you know, with the Twin Peaks issues. This is what I love about Lynch's art. He just puts fuck you into his art.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he does. And he does it. Yeah, this one's the most obvious, I think, of that particular fuck you. I'll tell you what made me laugh again. There's another one of my favourite moments in this, and I've only just laughed at it on my third watch, but I actually pissed myself, not literally. The Uncle Dale bit and the black gloves, you know, when she's telling him about, you know, this fucking crazy uncle who's scared these black gloves because the aliens come, and then he realises they're his black gloves. And then he's in the kitchen, he's making sandwiches, and his mum comes down and goes, what are you doing? I'm making my lunch. He's fucking stays up all night and makes loads of sandwiches. But then the best part is then he puts cockroach in his pants and he puts one in his anus. I'm like, what the... Right, I'm not even going to fucking try and make sense out of that. That is just funny as fucking dick. That's just brilliant. Because I couldn't. I was trying to think what does this mean. And I don't care. I was just too busy laughing. I thought it was brilliant.
Ants in your pants. I don't know.
Ants in your pants. Yeah. Well, he didn't. He put them on his pants, but only put one in his anus. I'm like, what the fuck?
The bit that I really liked is that, and I've forgotten who the actor is, but he's in the bar, and he talks like a munchkin.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Well,
that was great.
Yes.
And we have a crystal. We have a crystal ball at some point.
I think that's the passing of time. I looked at the crystal ball, the passing of time. But squeaky voice, buddy, it sounds like a munchkin. You've got the two guys. I think the two guy assassins, not the sort of lady with the leg. They're walking along in bad tuna, and the one that plays Jerry in Twin Peaks, he's making these weird bird noises to the other guy when they're walking along the street, and then it goes to him, and he's going bah! And then he starts doing his talking. I'm like, what the fuck is this bird thing going on about? What does this mean? Like, this is what I mean about this animalistic theme running throughout it.
I love Harry Dean Stanton's character, Johnny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt sorry for him. I knew it wasn't really going to come to a good end.
No, you could tell that straight from the beginning, because he's never in a good end to any of his fucking films.
I do like the end of his sort of arc. He's so happy because he fancies Marietta and he's always fancied her, and she's toyed along with him.
Yeah.
And then she finally says, yeah, all right, then we're on. And he goes back to his room, and that's the end of him. That's basically, he gets taken by Grace Zabriskie with the monobrow.
Yeah.
And the black cowboy with the silver dollar.
Yeah, I love all that silver dollar stuff. When he sends $2, one for Johnny, one for Sailor, you know, through the door. Mm. And all that element of it. And I thought them three, particularly when they get Johnny, You know, and she's got the tape over his mouth and all that. And she's really sinister, that assassin. With the thing on her leg, isn't it? And the cane and all that. I thought they were just, that was,
she,
again,
she was crazy. Scared the shit out like, of me. She reminded me of Bob from Twin Peaks.
Yeah.
You know, the absolute like mad craziness. And apparently that scene does go on longer, but he cut that. It was one of the bits he cut with regards to people was moaning about it being too sexual. And he had cut a fair bit of the gore out of it. I would love to see that one day that he releases a director's cut of it.
Does he? I don't think he does that, though, does he?
Well, he did Blue Velvet with the 52 extra minutes for me, yeah. He does the film on one disc. This is for Blue Velvet anyway. Then he does. There's a 52-minute bit of the parts that he cut that he didn't want to cut as well.
He did the same with Firewalk with me. Didn't he?
Well, Missing Pieces, yeah.
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 Well, it would be good to see what was going on. What was the torture they was going to put him through? Because he just goes off, doesn't it, at that point?
I think we already know from Grace Zabriskie's performance that he's in a very bad spot and she's extremely evil. And there's no way he's going to end well for him. Although he takes it really rather well, I think, Johnny.
Yeah,
because he kind of accepts that this is the end, and I presume he gets shot in the back of the head. But you know,
and also he's a man that watches animals on telly ripping each other to bits and drinking whiskey and barking at.
So
animals.
He might like what he was watching.
Yeah,
you never know.
I love all that shit. Yeah, it's all that kind of stuff.
I tell you one, when William Dafoe came on, didn't it remind you of the Blue Velvet, the guy?
Yeah, Frank. Exactly. Yeah, Frank.
And you could tell that William Dafoe must have watched Blue Velvet and thought, like, fucking hell, I'm doing my bit. Because he takes over every scene what he's on. You know what I mean? Whether he's done on purpose, it's brilliant.
And he is a sexual predator as well.
Yeah. Sexual predator, and, just like Frank.
Yeah. It's disgusting.
When he went for his costume fitting, I was saying about the dentures, but it was he said usually you go in and you talk about your costume. You know, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. Lynch just went, you're wearing this, we're taking it to the dentist, we're going to get you a cast done. And that was it. And he was like, it was the best thing ever. It was so, like William Dafoe said, best thing ever, so easy. Them teeth went in, I became this fucking character, Bobby Peru. And he said, like, just, it was just, it freaked him out a bit, I think, as well. He said, I never sort of just turned like that. When I looked at myself in the mirror, I was just like, oh my God.
William Dafoe is an absolutely incredible actor.
Oh, he is. He's fucking incredible.
It's just he does lots of really weird films. Films that require him doing what, like, proper actors having to suffer there for their art. Like Isabella Rossellini. Yeah. And she accepted and sort of threw herself into it. And you get the most out of people. Like when in Mulholland Drive, the masturbating scene.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't let her stop. And she hated doing it, but what you got out of it at the end was an amazing performance.
Well, it's how he picks them as well. And we've talked about it in the past on a couple of the other podcasts, but now what we've seen up to now is Laura Dern in Twin Peaks, you've seen her in Blue Velvet, you've seen her in this. Each one are completely different character.
Completely different.
How much... And he more or less discovered her, because you only did one film or some TV thing before Blue Velvet, and he discovered her and he used her knowing that she'll be right, and then he used her again knowing she'll be right in this, when you've already used her as the placid girl next door, and now you're asking, you need to be wild in this. It's that connection he has with his actors, where he uses them again and again because he knows what he can get from them.
And I think once he's figured out that somebody's a really good actor, he doesn't let it go to waste. He definitely used it again. It's like Laura Dern went on from strength to strength after this. Did she do Jurassic Park after this as well?
Yeah.
And that's like completely different. You can almost not recognise her.
No.
She's just playing, playing generic kind of love, not, you know, like with a bit of balls, you know, in Jurassic Park. She's just sort of doctor scientist, and she has the sort of aggravated thing with the men and all that. But she's just doing a normal Hollywood sort of thing. Like Dafoe. William Dafoe, he goes off and does Spider-Man and whatever else, makes his money probably.
Yeah.
Then he can go off and do stuff that's class and he really wants to do and he's amazing at.
Yeah. I think they all do a few films, don't they? I think actors and actresses to get the money in or get the name about. Well, like you said, William Dafoe only did one last year, The Lighthouse, which I watched only recently.
Are you calling him William or Willem?
I did call him William, but now I'll call
him
Willem.
William as well.
All right. I know you were.
It's like Ralph Fiennes.
I was hoping you were all mistaken.
Yeah, no, that's what we were saying, John. Ralph Fiennes is the worst because it's spelled Ralph. It's fucking Ralph. Rafe. Ralph.
Well, it's
fucking
Bill.
Dog it's, barks.
It's Bill. Bill Defoe.
Billy Defoe.
Me and Bill.
There you go.
Me and Bill. Nick Cage as well.
Nicky Cage, baby. Boomer. Peanut.
Can we talk briefly about the heist at the end, the bank job?
Yes.
Oh.
First point I want to make is that when that cop is shooting Willem Dafoe's character.
Bill? Big Bill?
Yeah. Bill shot for William. You're still fucking wrong, Bob. At this point.
All right. Billin. Don't know.
Anyway, yeah. When he's shooting him, that gun is not going off. It's just like the actor's just doing the action of pretending the gun. There's no like what you normally get.
I didn't notice that.
Flashes. It was like, what did they just forget to do that or what? I mean, and then he blows his head off, and his Willem Dafoe's character blows his head off, and his brain lands on the side.
It's beautiful.
It's spine. Yeah.
And then Nick Cage just says the classic line. He seems to feel sorry for him. He goes, "What a bastard!" Sorry, like
poor fucking poor fucking bastard.
Poor fucking bastard.
The funniest part of all that though is the two guys that are in the bank or whatever that they get shot. One of them's lost his hand at the end. And he's like, "Where's my hand?" The fucking dog runs out with it.
Yeah.
But the thing I love about the end scene, I know we were sort of talking about it before, and obviously Laura Palmer's there, which is brilliant. But once he has that the thing and he says, "Thanks, lads," you know, and all that, it's really nice. So he's gone from like going, "I'm going to fucking have you," to like, "Thank you very much for sorting me out. Brilliant." And there's a photo of the mother. You know, the one that sort of keeps popping up with the ice on it, and that disappears once he makes his decision.
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, fuck off, Lynch, you're amazing." And then Love Me Tender comes in, and I'm just like, this is just come full circle. Amazing.
Well, it is great.
I think that's where, like John said, he's grown up now, and rather than having that woman, that mother, evil mother, in, you know what I mean, always covering her, Laura's character wanted some stability. Even though she went for Sailor, he was there to protect her. And as soon as he then went back to her to say, "Right, that's it. I know what I need to do. I've got a kid to look after." He grows up and the picture disappears. Like to say, she's no longer now. She's got what she wants.
She's been defeated as the Wicked Witch. And she disappears in smoke like the one in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. It's great. It's so brilliant.
I'm melting!
With the fire thing, I know you've twitched it a few times, John. What I do love about it, every time there's a small fire, like a match lit or a lighter or something, it's a big dramatic kind of thing. And I just think, so again, it's just the emphasis of fire, you know, what it can do to you and what it can put inside you and what it makes you and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite, it's a very small moment, but it was great. Nicolas Cage drives to see Red Snakeskin Shoe Girl. I can't remember her name, I'm really sorry.
Oh, yeah.
So he drives to see her to find out if he's got a contract on his head. And
Adita.
As he drives up, he just keeps doing this, like big music, this tree shaking.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's all of a sudden there was like a massive brass.
Oh, fuck yeah.
And
then he goes to Cam.
And then like that's, I mean, if anything, like, I don't know quite what it means because what happens there isn't that dramatic.
No,
but it's like certainly negative, isn't it? But I really like that touch. In fact, the music-wise, while we're talking about Madramenti, he's
Mario Balotelli.
There's a few examples. Fucking Mario Balotelli, shut up. There's a few examples of like when there's some like swells of music when Lula's laying on the bed, and she kind of mentally knows that Nicolas Cage is in the midst of fucking up. And she knows that he's going to get caught again. And she's really upset. There's a swell of like... And it's Wagnerian, I would say. It's like Wagner.
Yeah.
It's totally... It swells and it swells and it's like... Oh, it's so intense. I love the way he does that. Yeah.
It's the music and the sound is the sound effects as well. But I think this one definitely leans much more towards the music to create the atmosphere.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You know, like, and also the soundtrack's fucking ace.
Yeah,
you got some great sort of 50s tunes in there. Mm. And stuff like that. I think, yeah,
it's just a genius, great mix. Isn't it? I think this is probably the movie of his with the most use of music and sound, with the Bagladente. You've got the
Mario Balotelli.
Barry Balotelli. Barry White. So you got
Kenny Rogers. Kenny Rogers back again, is he?
Oh my God.
And then he's got.
You bunch of fucking idiots, honestly.
Oh, sorry, John, for having me laugh.
Sorry,
serious.
John. And then
sorry, John.
But then you've got the 90s stuff as well. And it feels so 90s, isn't it, when you're watching
it?
But it could also be your 1960s, 1970s Badlands, that old film Badlands, where the lad and girl in love goes along cross country on a road trip killing people and stuff. You know what I mean? It's got elements of that fed into it. And it's got the music just drives it and propels it forward, the next step. Like, there's a great bit where she's in the car and he's falling asleep and she's trying to pick on a radio station. And it's coming up about there's bodies in this and they're thinking of put crocodiles in or something to kill off the bodies floating in.
A shitload of bad news and about the awfulness of the modern life and what's happening in the world. And then she can't find a radio station, so they stop. And he finds a metal station, and they just fucking go at it, dancing in the desert.
Yeah, because
as the sun sets, it's just amazing.
It's brilliant. It's a great scene.
I was going to say that was my. I think that's one of my last notes. Is that radio scene? It was just. I just want something nice. And the next, let's go. Ah, fuck the world!
Fucking Nicolas Cage high kicking everywhere.
But that's more.
Nicolas Cage is brilliant. He's brilliant in this. You cannot deny
it's more relevant now than ever, because I don't even want to fucking look at the news half the time because it's so shit. And I'm switching on the radio. I'm like, I don't want to listen. And then when you're hitting that piece of music or something, when you switch through, you're like, fuck it, yes, that's it. I can drive now to Tesco.
I've decided now my sort of, well, nearly New Year's resolution is just to read Anus Horribilis, you know, the Viz news.
Anus.
Anus Horribilis.
No, actually,
that's
it is Horribilis, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anus
so apparently, Bob, what? Think of Guy Blockbuster. He's got two left feet. Really struggles dancing and buying shoes. And that's what I want in my news because it's bollocks and it's funny. It doesn't harm my mind.
We need it more today than ever.
We do.
I did like when they're in Big Tuna, and
Big Tuna.
And they're sat around the table talking to Jack Nance and other people like that. Then all of a sudden, these really fat, naked women come out and start.
Well, because that's...
Trailer trash women.
Texas-style porn, John. Texas-style porn.
It's weird, isn't it?
Because you've got these big glasses coming up. And then you've got the cowboy and the sort of sinister-looking guy who, obviously, they've all been making this porno. That's Texas-style porn, John, apparently. Amazing. I tell you what made me laugh as well, that guy that comes out when they find out the names of the couple that were killed in the car. And he comes out, goddamn, he was a son of a bitch and all this kind of stuff. And he's proper just shouting and just being mental. I don't know who the guy was, but he was like proper redneck hillbilly, you know, he was stupid and all this kind of stuff. Was that
the Sherilyn Fenn scene when the car crash?
After that, you know, when they sat around the table, there's
a guy. Are they talking about that car crash?
Yeah, yeah. And this guy comes out and goes, oh, he was goddamn, you know, anyway, and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. And he's just like a complete moron, obviously.
I do really like that Sherilyn Fenn scene because, like, you can imagine if somebody's just come out, had a car crash, and they're all, like, wandering around, and, like, she puts her hand to her head, and, like, it's all sticky.
And
she just fucking dies in front of her. What's her last word? Something like,
get my lipstick out of my bag. Yeah.
That's kind of, like, shows to, like, It's also the shock. Well, yeah, that's what I mean. She's in shock, and it's just like she's dead.
Yeah.
And they're all like, she just died in front of us. And, it's kind of like a little lesson learned on that road trip about the fragility of it all. And I think Johnny has to fuck up immensely. Not Johnny. Sailor has to fuck up immensely and get in jail again for him to learn that final lesson. And yet he still doesn't, and he comes out and he's got his little kid there.
Yeah.
And he needs to have the shit kicked out of him to finally sink into his head. Stop being a dick. It's not about your freedoms anymore. It's about sharing it all. That's what it's about.
I was going to say, does he take his snakeskin jacket off at the end? But he doesn't. No. He has it on, doesn't he, singing? That would have been quite cool if he'd have taken it off, because that would have been him going, whatever. You're welcome, Lynch. You can have that one for next time.
The bit where
he'll not be doing any more films, I don't think, Lynch. I don't think he's going to do anything else now.
He did that little Jack film, didn't he?
Have you not heard the rumours on it? He's come out to say that if it wasn't for the lockdown, he already had a film in mind, and people are thinking it's something to do with Twin Peaks, and he says, no, I already had a film in mind. As soon as we're out, hopefully get to complete it. But that's all he said.
He's also said, like, cinema's dead and he won't do it anymore. But so, you know, you maybe can't believe him.
I think he's got to aim towards, like, Netflix stuff. He loves that.
He's got that thing on Netflix.
Yeah, he started. He's on the books.
Yeah, once you start one and get the money in from Netflix, you can buy some more painting stuff.
Do some more of his own at that.
That bit where they see the car crash, yeah, I saw it as them seeing themselves if they don't stop.
Yeah, a cautionary tale. A lesson.
If they don't slow down and calm down with what they're doing. And then right at the end, when you see the other car crash and she grabs the son and she pulls him away to say, don't look at this car crash. And then you've got a guy in his wheelchair saying, I know. I saw a car crash like that, old man. What are you going to...
Yeah, that's fucking... Yeah.
I can't help but laugh. It's so dark.
I know what you mean. But as well, I think that just sort of confirms what you're saying, is that the road they could go on. And he sort of put the emphasis on that as well, the guy in the wheelchair. This is where you could go, but let's just have it in, you know, go somewhere nice.
Still trying to work out Santos and all that side of the story is kind of like peripheral to it all, really. But
sorry, John.
No, go on.
I was going to say, when he's included, but it's the story of Sailor. He's worked for him. It's, you know, yeah, involved in killing her dad. And
I understand the plot, but I just think it's just the fact that what is his relationship with Marietta, and why is he there, and why is he doing that? That's a little bit.
I looked at it. They were having an affair, Santos and Marietta, and that's why he got rid of her husband. That sort of love thing. That's the way I saw it. I don't know.
Well, maybe,
You see a scene where she's at the window, or he's at the window, sorry, she's hiding somewhere else, and they have this kiss, and like, she's like, yeah! That's just after he's burnt the dad.
Yeah, set him on fire, running about the room.
Yeah.
And there's a scene where they're travelling, they've basically run out of money, and they're in this shitty motel, and they've got, like, she's puked on the floor and there's maggots and flies around.
Oh, yeah, it's nasty.
The room stinks of puke. That's just like, she's sort of, and then she finds out she's pregnant in that room, and then Sailor finds out from Bobby Peru.
Yeah, yeah.
That she's pregnant. Yeah. And that's like, you expected at that point that he will kick off, but they are so in love that he basically just swallows that anger and goes and gives a kiss on the head. And because it's like, there are secrets between them, but he's willing to like let those secrets out. Like he tells the secret that he was a driver for Santos. And like, even despite those, they're still rock solid together. Perfect love story.
I liked his, he also said that, you know, Clyde, her dad, that he knew him and he was a nice guy, and obviously didn't know, you know, all that kind of stuff and what was going on. But, he, you know, it's a big thing to get off his chest, the fact he was just there. But I think it's his mother that's her mother that's instigating this, because she's fucking mental amongst this whole bad boy, sort of rich guy, gangster or whatever.
Covering herself in lipstick and shit, that was a bit weird.
Oh,
that was strange.
On the face of that was weird, but on the wrist where she's like doing it on her wrist, like she wants to slit her
cut herself. Yeah.
She didn't. She just got the lipstick, didn't she? Yeah. She started putting the lipstick on her fucking wrist like that, and then her fucking face. And she was amazing. Like, she was proper mental. Over top, like, it was crazy, but she was class.
She was mental, but you got on her side. On her side, I'm not supporting what she did, but you know, she lost her husband. And then...
Which she instigated.
Which she instigated as well, right? But she's got her and her baby. And then she finds out about the abuse as well of her daughter. And you can see that she just wants to try and keep that one purity in her life. And she just seems to be... She knows she's fucking evil. And all the people she messes about with. But she doesn't want her daughter being the same as her or going out with the bad lads to be... She can see herself growing up to be the same as her. Well, even though she went a darker route with the lads that she was interested in because, you know, the bad boy, you sort of think that Sailor, he has got a good heart. He's a fucking nutter, but he's got a good heart. He does do bad boy stuff, but it's his upbringing and the people he hangs around with.
Johnny. I think he's a bit like Johnny.
Yeah.
I don't think Johnny necessarily is a bad guy, and he's obviously obsessed by the mother. But the mother knows, even though she says to Santos, don't kill Johnny, don't kill Johnny, don't kill Johnny, she knows that Johnny's going to get killed.
Yeah.
And, you know, and she's like, she might be crying about it and saying no, 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 but she knows that's part of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And she's willing to do it. She's willing to pay a man at the very beginning to fucking kill Sailor. I mean, it's a very much an over-exaggeration of a protective parent, isn't it?
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
That's it, like, yeah.
I just think she's fucking is, fucking hell.
She's like the extreme opposite of Laura Palmer's mum. Where Laura Palmer's mum ignored what was going on
sedated.
And fucking knew what was going on and was pissed up. She's like, flips the other way and just wants to keep her locked up in a room. Let's have a last round. Last round.
Lula, when she admits that she's pregnant to Sailor, and she asks him, "Are you in?" And she's referring to the bank job. It's Bobby that says, "Are you in?"
Yeah.
But he just told Sailor that she's pregnant, and he replies, "I'm really not sure." Now, whether he's replying about Lula and staying with her with the baby, or the bank job, is not made clear. And that's quite a nice little thing to do.
I think, though, when him going back to his missus and then, you know, his realisation he's got a kid in the way, that sort of cements the fact that he's going to do the bank job. You know what I mean? Because he's thinking this will get a way to get the money to help. So I wonder if William Dafoe used that in a way to say, you know, your missus is fucking pregnant.
But it also is the wild child in him, the wild at heart, metal loving, freedom loving, just carefree guy, who kind of rebels against. He's always rebelling against everything. What he got, against it, and he's rebelling against that kind of being forced into a sort of family in the same way that Eraserhead, Jack Nance's character in Eraserhead, is particularly. Terrified about becoming a father, so I think that's got something to do with it as well. And so he accepts the bank job because he insists on being free.
Yeah.
And it's just a bad decision, another bad decision that he inevitably ends up regretting, and rightly so. That's it.
For me, this has just been lovely therapy. Before I started speaking to you, after just watching it for the third time, I literally felt a bit, I don't know, like on edge, just... Because, like I say, for me, it's the darkest Lynch film we watched because of the way maybe watched it. So, it's nice to have talked about it because this has been, like I say, a lovely therapy for me. I mean, one of the things I'd like to sort of bring in is my favourite TV show, Cobra Kai.
Oh, my God. I'm not putting another fucking Cobra Kai image in. You did that on purpose.
I'm joking. Joking. But no, I just think, thank you for
wank
the therapy.
Wank on, wank off.
And you know, like what we said, watch, you know, Elephant Man, it was going to be a bit linear, a bit of a break from some of David Lynch's films. I feel this isn't like your Mulholland Drive. This isn't your twisty stuff. You know what I mean? This isn't your Twin Peaks. It's dark, but the comedy in it lifts it up. I mean, it's twisty, it's over melodramatic, but the music in it really, really drives it and keeps it going. So for me, it wasn't that much of a head fuck as these other films where I'm really enjoying delving into understanding each part. You sort of understand it as it's shown to you on screen. So there isn't in there.
It's rawer than Mulholland Drive, which is a well-crafted piece in comparison, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think many of the same messages are in there, though. There's certainly, it's Lynchian, definitely, this film.
It's raw and more obvious. You know, the Wizard of Oz stuff and just general things in there. They're kind of a lot more obvious than Mulholland Drive or, you know, whatever as he goes. But nonetheless, this is still as brilliant because it's him that we said before saying, fuck you, after Twin Peaks. This is fuck, I'm angry. And I'm going to show it in this film. And he fucking does.
He really does.
And wow. Like I say, man.
Okay, so can we decide what we're going to watch next? Not fucking next week. Next time.
Can I vote for The Straight Story?
Yeah.
I think after this mental inversion of me with this film, I need just something a bit lighter. And to be honest, a lot of people, I'm not saying Lynch fans, but a lot of people in general rave about The Straight Story. So it's a great film. So I'd like to see him doing something, just a normal, nice film.
Yeah.
I want to save Inland Empire for the headfuck finale it will be, because apparently that's a bit of
a mental.
Lynch at his most Lynch.
Yeah.
And I think Straight Story will be a little bit of a palate cleanser before that.
Yeah. And we've got Lost Highway as well, haven't we, to do?
Yeah. Mm. And then you got Dune and Eraserhead. We'll finish up with Eraserhead.
Well, I've got my new box set, haven't I?
Yeah.
25th anniversary special. Lovely.
So listeners, so that's what we'll be listening. You'll be listening. We'll be fucking watching.
Well, if you watch as well, YouTube.
We've got a YouTube. We've got a YouTube channel. Yeah, get on there. Doing all right. Not like fucking YouTube king here, John.
Yeah. What are you on about?
I started
making him merchandise and everything though.
Yeah. I love John's Wood t-shirts. Thanks.
It's a great logo. Yeah. Oh, he's bought one of mine and all.
Oh, weird. Yeah, you left yours at home. That's what it is.
Scrumbled up on the side of the bed. Nice.
Yeah, all sticky. Right, so the next film will be The Straight Story. And listen, tune in, watch us do all the business. Thank you very much, listeners and watchers. Bye-bye. Bye.
Lynched. 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 Fuck you. Lynched.
You're not getting the last word. Fucking lynched.
Love me tender. Love me sweet. Never.
End of time.